And welcome, everybody, and welcome to this webinar with Lorimer Moseley, Better Outcomes for Pain Patients. And Loz is around. Yeah, we finally got you. That was a
Oh,
good.
so sorry about technical hitches last time. Very challenging.
Yes. Yeah, it was
Very
unfortunate.
sorry, everyone.
So we're glad to make it today live, and you'll see always like things happening when you're planning live though. So we experienced that, but we're happy we just can get exactly the same opportunity to discuss better outcomes for chronic pain patients in a bit. So my name is Bart van Buchem. I'm a pain specialist physiotherapist, and I'm your host for today. I will asking some questions to Lorimer about better outcomes for patients, and especially regarding the courses that Lorimer will teach in the upcoming summer in both Europe and the US. And a particularly welcome to our German-speaking participants and from Physiozentrum in Austria, where Lorimer will teach a course in Austria, and to be more specific, on the date of 5 and 6 of July this year. So that's very exciting. Otherwise, Bernhard Taxer should be here, but we experienced something similar, unfortunately, so he couldn't make it. So I will represent Austria for today, if that's all right. My German is not that great, so apologize for that, but we will definitely try to make it worthwhile listening, and we'll make sure, even if you're listening to recordings, that you will find the links where you can check out for this exciting course in July this year. So welcome, Loz. Thank you for joining.
Thanks, Bart. Thanks for having me. Good evening. It's wine time here in South Australia. A bit different for all those people over there.
Very well. So, and people are joining from all over, from Scotland, UK, Sweden, Victoria, Australia, France,
Wow.
Northern Ireland.
Cool.
Yeah,
I think
so
I saw Taiwan, Vancouver. I'm coming to Vancouver. Can't wait.
wait, so that sort of
Sheffield.
definitely international flavor again, and we're very privileged to host this. So just get ourselves in this meeting and making sure that we're going to make the best of it, and let's just run down with the first question, Loz. So you have been done so much work over the last years, and some people have been listening to you maybe for 2 decades already. And what have we learned from pain treatment and the approaches that have has come to life over the last 2 decades? So what has changed, and what have you learned?
Wow, you say that, Bart, and I think, really, is it that long? I must be quite old, actually. Oh, what have we learned, and what have we learned about pain treatments? So much, I guess. I guess when you do the sort of work that I do, you sometimes feel like you're not moving at all, because things are slow. But yeah, a lot, so much has changed since 2004. Wow. I guess what, if I was to take a bit of a bird's eye view on that question and think about how the field, the subfield that I'm most engaged with, has changed. And I guess you could say in general, up until maybe early this century, and this is kept going, obviously, but the main approaches to treating chronic pain disorders, whatever those disorders might be, were primarily repurposed treatments from other conditions. So treatments that seem to be effective for depression or anxiety or fear, post-traumatic stress, acute injury management, all these sort of treatments that were effectively repurposed for chronic pain. And then over that, over the last sort of couple of decades, there's been a few research groups and probably a growing number of research groups that have concentrated on trying to understand the broader and deeper biological complexities associated with chronic pain. So what are the actual mechanisms involved here? And those studies involve brain imaging or animal studies, sort of extrapolating from animal studies, verifying some stuff in humans. And I think our own work and our own research group and clinical and research collaborators, we've packaged all of that stuff into theoretical models of how pain works and what happens in chronic pain. And that's led to models like the cortical body matrix theory. It's led to the fit for purpose model. And actually that'll be a core driving model of the courses that I'm running in Europe, UK and North America. It's the first time I've said Europe and UK as two different places. There you go. It's been a while since I've been over there. The fit-for-purpose model really is standardized by work from Ben Wan from Perth. He's done a lovely job in standardizing complex care packages so that we can test them in randomized controlled trials. The model itself, which sort of directly targets the pathologies of the disruptions that we've now got some understanding of around people with chronic pain. So rather than repurposing old treatments, new treatments have been developed and new treatments have been invented and they have been tested and tested through a very rigorous pathway of testing. And we call it the innovation to implementation pipeline. And what that means is that we identify the disruption, we innovate, we invent a new treatment to try and target that disruption. We work out if our treatment changes the disruption, and then if it does it change what's important to patients, which is normally around pain and disability and quality of life? And if it does, then we integrate it into complex care packages because we concede that chronic pain is complex. So I guess if I was to try and summarize all that's changed, that's a really monumental task. But I guess I would say we are now seeing the emergence at the end of a very long innovation to implementation or translation pipeline, effective treatments for chronic pain. And we conclude they're effective because of robust clinical trials from independent groups and a big chunk of real world data. And, you know, I the last 5 or 6 years of my own work around chronic pain are the most exciting of my years doing this research, because we're seeing things like recovery on the table rather than we try and manage this as best we can, but we accept or concede that there's not much we can do about it because it's, you know, these permanent changes in the nervous system or something like that. So we've changed our aspirations for patients to be much higher. The bar is much higher now, which puts a lot of more pressure on clinicians, but we've also spent a lot of time working out what sort of tools, what sort of technology, what sort of strategies can we provide clinicians to deliver treatments that are consistent with aiming higher? And what I mean by that is aiming for significant improvements and often recovery for people with chronic pain. How was that, Bart? I feel like I could go for hours on what's changed in the field.
That's a bit of a risk. Yeah. I agree there. But I do think it makes sense, right? So let's follow up with another question that has emerged and we thought would be interesting. So where can we improve compared to what is done? Because I do think clinicians do a great job already. So yeah. What seems to be the point of improvement? And I think many people will be interested. So where do I have to improve to get better outcomes?
Let me pick up on one thing you said, and that was that clinicians do a great job. And I think that's really important for us to embrace and acknowledge and own. I mean, most of my work is not clinical. So I see 4 patients a week now. But that ends up being 3 or 4 hours. And that time for me is so important because it reminds me of the brilliant work that clinicians are doing every day in what is a really challenging situation. So I want to pick up on that. And then your question about what can we improve? And I guess I think the evidence is only building that we're onto something when we're trying to change people's understanding of the problem and integrate that into a brain and body targeted complex care pathway. Where we can improve, I think, is I'm very interested in the sort of general public understanding of pain thing, but I don't see that as the responsibility of clinicians beyond their interactions that they have within the course of their work and their everyday life. So if we go into that next level, I think where we can improve is in the sort of primary care, that level of care when people are not appropriate for tertiary multidisciplinary pain management program, but someone who's challenged by pain has this first interaction with a healthcare professional. And I think what we can do better there are the implementation of pretty simple skills and strategies that we now know reduce physiological arousal, they reduce the sense of threat, they promote learning. And as the evidence builds that learning is really important for recovery, learning how pain actually works, I think we're understanding what it is about how pain actually works that seems to be the linchpin of understanding. So how can we improve? I think we can get better at the skills. I really do think we can't escape the reality that we have to have a pretty deep understanding of how pain works ourselves, because the evidence is building again that clinicians who understand it well and consistent with contemporary knowledge just make different decisions and give different cues and say different things and say even the same things in different ways. And once you have a deeper understanding, some of those decisions and the decision-making process itself shift. So I guess it's a matter of knowledge and understanding and skills. And then I guess it's a matter of us all getting on the same page. So that's a case of fighting the vested interests where there is benefit in not solving the problem of chronic pain. And I think every clinician who would, everyone who turns up to something like we're doing here, Bart, and the things that you guys put on, in my view, they're the community who wants better outcomes for their clients at a really, and really driving for that. But there are also communities who are not as driven by that, and they're driven by other things. So I guess what can we improve? I think it's that we keep pushing the interests of consumers, and we push those interests in all of our conversations, even when it is a bit socially uncomfortable to do that. It's a bit cryptic.
Yeah, but it does make sense totally. And we just can see how this field has moved to a better understanding of what is the message that has to come across. And again, I think we haven't really touched on the social and the social and cultural aspects of pain treatment. In the meantime, I just figured out that Lorimer, we just lost him for a bit, but Adelaide connections can be tricky as thunderstorms moves in and out, and I expect Lorimer to jump on. But in the meantime, Bernard has joined, and Bernard is our Austrian representative from Neu Group, and therefore I just wanted to briefly introduce him as Dr. Bernard Taxer. Thank you for joining, Bernard. You've been able to listen to Lorimer, and you will ask him a few questions after this. So could you, as you will be part of the course in Vienna, you'll be about there. So can you give me a little bit of your background and your role in this meeting?
Yeah, hi everybody. My name is Bernhard. Thank you, Bart, for the introduction. I'm a physiotherapist here in Austria and a teacher in Neu Group since I think 5 years now, 5-6 years now. And we are very keen to develop our Explain Pain curriculum and also the Moniz courses with our German-speaking group of all the other teachers we have here. And looking forward to this course and to this master session with Lorimer. My role is to help Physiozentrum in Vienna, where I'm sitting actually right now in the boss's office. I'm sitting in Martin Metz's office. And we are very happy to welcome Lorimer in July, hopefully. And we try to make a nice or have a nice time with all the content which is new or which got new in the last years of evidence and research Lorimer did, and we are keen to translate this research into practical skills as well. So this should be a hands-on course where we can exercise all this stuff we learned about fit for purpose model and from the fit for purpose model study, which is also guiding me to a question to Lorimer. Actually, if you think that this study is opening some kind of new era in studying clinical trials to combine several treatment approaches for this so often called multimodal approach in pain management, do you think this is some kind of new era in clinical trials? Because we know from the older times comparing one approach with the other and we see, okay, everything helps somehow, and now we're trying to combine it and get a little bit more effort out of this, what we are actually doing in the clinical field. Hi, Lauren.
Sorry, I disappeared. I think that might be my end. I'm very sorry. Thanks, Bernard. I think it's important that we don't overplay the sort of that one clinical trial for the Resolve trial published in JAMA. That really is the now. But I need you to keep moving because I didn't realize we'd disappeared. So I don't know how much time I was gone for, but. Keep nodding your head or doing something, and I'll know we're still connected. I mean that was a really important clinical trial, but that clinical trial protocol was developed in 2017, and that was six and a half, seven years ago. So a lot has changed in that time. Thinking about your question, Bernard, I do think that trial was very important because it was designed in a way that we're almost convinced that it would not detect a difference between groups because we were working so hard to match everything we could between the two treatment groups, the sham and the active treatment, and we wanted to match everything except the components of the active treatment that we thought might be powerful, and then we carefully assess those components to see how powerful are they. And The reason that I think that trial was very important was, and I think you've alluded to this, that with low back pain, there are so many clinical trials against usual care or, you know, doing not much. And the nature of the problem is that, we'll always see an effect in that comparison, in my view. This is my view. But what we wanted to do, and this is a phrase in our research group, we wanted to dance to the data. We wanted to make the treatment work very hard for its signal. And this is, in my view, what all scientists should be trying to do, because we're trying to prove hypotheses wrong, or if the structure of the question is a bit different, we want the evidence to refuse to be ignored rather than for us to sort of go in there and try and find some sort of signal. So I think it does. It is part of what I would describe as a new wave of complex care packages that are heavily grounded in reconceptualization of the problem. And there have been other clinical trials that are in that broad genre of intervention. The RESTORE trial on cognitive functional therapy, published in The Lancet, I think is also an important contribution. That trial took a particular type of patient. And my view is that the control condition for that trial was not the best one they could have chosen. But what that trial showed is that if you have someone who is directed towards a treatment that's focused on reconceptualizing the nature of the problem and then moving within that new sense of understanding, that's better than sending them away and saying, keep doing what you're doing. I think it's very hard as a scientist to interpret. But as someone who has some understanding of cognitive functional therapy and a lot of conversations with Peter O'Sullivan, it's a really important contribution, because it shows the field again, hang on, there are things that you can do for people with chronic back pain. There was also a trial coming out of the US published in JAMA Psychiatry, I think, on pain reprocessing therapy. Again, I wasn't a big fan of the control group, but it's based on reconceptualizing the problem broadly around the explained pain model, and then an approach suggesting that pain is not about somatic data. So it's almost like a sort of more radical version of what we're doing in our group. But I do think that there is building from various research groups a new understanding that you can do clinical trials with complex care packages or multimodal care packages. What we think is important in that is that we're able to standardize the treatments for the clinical trial, and that's where Ben Wand has done a beautiful job with standardizing fit-for-purpose intervention for back pain. And we're now running trials with knee pain that was run by Tasha Stanton, phantom limb pain, complex regional pain syndrome, chronic neck pain, all centered on the fit for purpose model, all at various stages of development, and all just coursing in exactly the same way. So I think that the days when people would say, oh, well, you can't do a placebo for a complex care intervention, well, we've clearly proven that is not true. We've clearly developed a placebo that controls for all the for as many of the non-specific effects as we can. We measure it. It's equally credible. Felicity Braithwaite out of our group has done some fabulous and elegant studies looking at how do you get credible placebos for complex care and physical interaction treatments like dry needling. And you can do it. You just have to have, in my view, you have to have the mindset that you want the treatment to fight for the signal. You don't just want to do a trial to prove something works. You want to do a trial to make sure it works, and you couldn't possibly get that wrong. So I was very excited about the RESOLVE outcomes, and the long-term outcomes are cool, and the secondary outcome data are cool, but taking a very conservative lens on it, it's really the first complex care package tested against a sham that's credible and equally so that shows a clinically important difference. So that's cool.
Just a very last question on this. So do you think like clinical practice can do equally as good as the trial did, or do you think in a one-on-one basis, you think like there's more flexibility, clinicians can exceed or being in the top 10% of the results of the trial? Because I do think the limitations of the trial is very protocolized, it's very much limited because of the methodology. So how should we interpret that?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Bart. So the trial showed at the primary outcome, showed a 1-point difference on a pain scale with the sham. On other variables, there were sort of bigger differences between that and the sham. But that's not the clinical impact of the treatment. That's the difference in clinical impact of the treatment versus a treatment that got a lot of good stuff in it. Had a lot of good stuff in it. So as a clinician, you would expect, far greater impact. 50% of the people in the treatment group there were recovered at follow-up, completely recovered at follow-up. So they're the sort of bars that I think clinically we should be aiming at, because we don't have to be as protocolized. We can also draw on clinical skills that when not integrated into the treatment, we can progress development or escalate care for aspects of people's presentations that you can't do in a trial. You know, so if someone's distressed and anxious, you can't add a treatment or address that as part of care if you're doing a randomized controlled trial, but you can in a clinical interaction. And I think we should be expecting much better results clinically. But that's the nature of doing clinical trials against a sham. It's called an explanatory trial. You want to understand why it works. You don't just want to show that it does, because with most chronic pains, almost anything is going to work a bit in a pre-post way. I think that as a clinician, stick in some of your motivational interviewing skills, your clinical reasoning skills, your ability to recruit the people around you in a social context, your ability to craft the environment, your ability to give them nudges in, with a text message, or metaphorically slipping a little post-it note in their pocket with a key nugget of information. You're not as constrained with the sort of education you deliver. And I guess specifically talking about the RESOLVE trial, the education is very didactic and prescriptive in that trial. And our education in the real world now is not like that at all. We're using virtual reality for embodied learning experiences that increase learning acquisition by 30 to 50%. We're rewriting patient manuals so that we're integrating contemporary ideas of active, engaged learning processes. So we have moved a long way from when we planned the treatment for the RESOLVE trial.
Yeah, that makes sense, right? It's such a journey again. So because we have to wrap up, and I just want to thank you, and also thank you for the questions. We've seen some questions come in, so we're unfortunately not able to take these questions, but I think they're all relevant. And just bear with us, and especially when you can join one of the meetings in the upcoming summer, it will be all opportunity to discuss all these matters and discussions from a clinical view. So also you will be able to meet Bernard Taxer in Vienna, and he will be around to be very supportive. So thanks, Bernard, for joining this meeting from the office in Vienna. And we're looking forward to see you there. And thank you for listening and watching this sessions. So thank you again, Loz.
Thanks, everyone. Sorry about the technical hitch. Definitely mine.
You're all good.
Can't wait to see you all. And you all can join the pain revolution. Look, I'm wearing merchandise.
Well done. And thanks for it. And you will be referred to the mastersessions.academy website, where you can see the dates and more details, especially when you're in the location of Austria. I would recommend you to stick with us and ask for more information. So anything you want to add, Bernard?
No, thanks. We're looking forward to hear Lorimer's view on how to translate the science into the practical stuff for all the clinicians that are looking forward to see you then in July. And we are, yeah, we are happy to work that out.
That's all good. Great. Thank you. For everyone, have a great day or afternoon or night, or if you've been watching the recordings, they will be on YouTube very soon and you will be notified by that. Thank you again. Have a great day. See you later. Take care.
Thanks, everyone. Ciao.
Ciao.